Ezra chapter 3, verse 7. He said he got to verse 6, so I'm not going to go back. We do have four lessons that we're being taught, and the other lessons will always come back again. It just happens that way. There's a great lesson on compromise in the fourth chapter. There's other lessons to be taught. So we're going to start at chapter 3, verse 7, where they gave money to buy everything. When they came over there back to Jerusalem, they had a lot of money. And they hire the Sidonians and the Tyre and Sidon is who they hire to get the lumber, get the masonry, whatever. Just like David did when he built the first temple. It's actually the same thing. So they're going to get all this stuff together. Now, this is important. I just want to mention this important because when we get to the fifth chapter and we find out that they had quit building the temple, it seems that they might have used this building material to build their own houses rather than to build the temple. That seems like. And that's a, we'll talk about that more at that time. But they're ready to start building the temple. They get everything together. Might take a little bit of time because it says they do bring them from Lebanon. They come back to Joppa, which is on the coast, and so they get close. So they start now in verse 8. We're going to start the building of the temple, and the first thing they do. I wonder where I'm at. My notes. Oh. I gave Ed here my outline on chapter 4, and I love to study the old Bible because I, you know, the Bible, period, but the Old Testament to me is just, it's what the thing says, the Old Testament is the New Testament concealed, and the New Testament is the Old Testament revealed. Well, anytime you study the Old Testament, you usually wind up in the New Testament because there's just so many lessons. And I love to study that. I love to keep notes and things like that. So my outline on chapter 4 came out to 11 pages. And you know, we can't do that. I mean, we'd be here 2 weeks, 3 weeks on chapter 4. So what I've done is taken that lesson, and I have reduced it down to about 5 pages of notes and things like that. So we'll go kind of fast, hoping to finish chapter 4, 3 and 4 tonight. So today. So you'll find me just kind of throwing these notes down here because I have to find out where he was. So we know about where we are. So chapter 3, verse 8, we're going to have the temple restoration is going to start. Now, we'll give you a quick thing. They're going to build the foundation, and then there's going to be a stoppage. They're going to stop work. And they're going to stop work for like 16 years. And this is what chapter 3 and chapter 4 is all about here. But it says on the second year of their coming, they start to build this foundation. Let's see, I got to get down to verse 8. Now we don't know, I mean, we talked this before, but the area where they're going to build the foundation is exactly the same place where the temple was before. Same thing. Now, we do know that Nebuchadnezzar, when he came 70, or not actually 70 years before, but a period of time before, he destroyed everything. So there's just burnt stone, burnt rubble, burnt masonry, things that probably are not able to use. But the place is still there. So they prepare to do this temple work. And that's far further in my notes than I am either. Just wait a minute here. I'm saying they had a complete set of plans. You know, when you look back and if you wanted to rebuild the tabernacle, you can't do it. There's not enough information to totally redo the tabernacle. You don't know if it has a flat roof or a sloping roof, things like that. But the temple, David had given Solomon the plans of how to build the temple. So these plans obviously are still here today. So they know how to build the temple and what to do. And another one here, like I say, I'm going pretty fast, but Okay, it'll come to my notes eventually. But they're going to build an exact same foundation is what they're going to do. Everybody has come to lay this foundation. And we have all the people building this. Verse 10, when the builders have laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord. Now, when we say laid foundation in our day and time, it could mean, you know, they have prepared the land. I'm in the what is my job? I check drawings of structural steel to go into a fabrication shop, and for many, many years before, not these last time I've been up here, I check commercial work. In other words, a church building. And the foundation, they'll scrape it off and it's ready, and that's laying a foundation. You can pour concrete, that's laying a foundation. There's many things to do. But they maybe do all of those. They may have scraped the land, got it ready, measured it out, set the corner stakes and everything like that. They have actually built the foundation to a certain point. But this is where they are in verse 10. And it says, the priests stood with their cymbals and trumpets. The people are singing. They're singing responsively. You know, maybe the Levites might sing a verse or two of some psalm or something like that, and the people respond. I mean, it's a happy day for all the people because what has happened and what they did. Verse 11, they sang praises, gave thanks to the Lord, saying, for he is good, for his loving kindness is upon us, upon Israel forever. And they shout because of all the people. Now, verse 12, it says, yet many of the priests and Levites and heads of the father's households, the old men who had seen the first temple, they weep with a loud voice when the foundation of this house was laid before their eyes, while many shouted for joy. So we have some people shouting for joy that we've got this foundation laid, we're on our way, we're going to build the temple, do what God wants. And you have some older people back there saying, well, you know, I'm pretty sad and I'm crying because of what? You know, maybe they're remembering how big the temple. I need to do this. When Cyrus gives the decree for them to go back and build the temple, the dimensions of the temple that Cyrus says is bigger than the temple that Solomon has. Okay, so it's not, they're not weeping because the temple is going to be smaller, and they might be weeping because of just remembering how great an event this would be, that we get to have a place to worship, or we get to do what God wants to say. They may be weeping because they're remembering their sins and what brought them here in the first place. You know, we sin and God punished us, and that's why we have to start over again. There's all sorts of things why these older men could be weeping, but they had actually seen the old temple, and that was really probably something. So they have people that's shouting for joy. We have people weeping, and you can't distinguish the two. It's a great day. Whatever. Maybe these people are remembering when they build this temple, they might not have everything in this temple that they had in the old temple. Now, I have no idea about this, okay? I just always wonder, did this temple and the Herod's temple, did they have the Ark of the Covenant? You know, I don't think they could have the first one. Maybe it was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. Maybe it was in the temple treasure that Nebuchadnezzar returned with them. Maybe they used the Law of Moses and they just rebuilt one. I have absolutely no idea. But maybe they're remembering, these people, older guys, are remembering what all of the things were lost before. Oh yeah, yeah. That's that one group. You know, they're just happy as can be, and the older people are remembering how times used to be. I mean, we don't know what they're remembering really, and maybe they're remembering the old temple. Maybe they're remembering their sins that caused this all to happen. I have some. Maybe not. So it's not really knowing what happened there. But the sound of joy couldn't be distinguished from the sound of the weeping. So we end chapter 3, and now they're ready to start building the temple. They've got the lumber. They got the rocks. They got builders maybe they hire. They're ready to go. They got the foundation. And so we start with chapter 4, and then we have problems. And it starts out very quickly by saying, now when the enemies of Judah and Benjamin heard that the people of the exile were building a temple of the Lord, they approached Zerubbabel and want to help. Now, the enemies that we're talking about here are the Samaritans. Now, do all of y'all know how the Samaritans came about? If not, it's in my notes, and we're going to go through it right quick. Turn with me to 2 Kings chapter 17, and this is the history. This is why or how these people got to be there. Starting in 17, verse 1 to verse 5, we don't really need to read all that, but basically what happened is this is the final destruction of Israel. And these first five or six verses, in this six verses, the kingdom of Israel, the northern kingdom, the ten tribes, is gone forever. They're gone. Never more to be heard of as a nation of ten tribes. Now, there's going to be promises that in Ezekiel that all these people will be united again as tribes, but not as two separate nations and stuff such as that. But this happened in 722 B.C. There was a three-year siege of Samaria when this happened. But we will also remember that it wasn't, on that point in time that all the ten tribes were gone because they did leave at different times. Ken made mention of this morning's sermon about Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh that didn't cross over the Jordan. They were the first ones to leave. They were the first one to be taken away. And then later on, and this will be in your outline next week, later on in other passages, you'll find where other parts of Israel were taken away. And then Samaria and the surrounding area was left until they're finally gone too. Now, as each of these people were taken away, it's the Assyrian policy to bring people in and replace them, replace whoever they take off to some faraway place. Verse 6, where he settled them into the Hala, Habor, on the river of Gozan, and in the city of the Medes. This is where everybody's going to wind up, basically, with them. I'm going to look right here. So it was a policy of Assyria to take these people away. And I'm assuming, this is my assumption, that they'd only take the best of the people. I mean, the poor people, the people that don't have a craft or something like that, they're going to leave them. The bottom of the barrel, they leave. And so it's probably not a lot of people they leave, but they do leave these people in Israel. And then they replace them with other captured countries that they have. Of course, nobody's really strong enough. And the reason they do this is that, number one, if you brought somebody into the land of Israel, they got no fight for this land and rebel against Assyria for this land here when their home is somewhere far, far away. They're just not going to do it. And these nations, because they are different nations, they're not going to unite together and rebel against Assyria. So there's reasons why they do this. But anyway... Oh, I'm way down there. So they're basically not causing problems for Assyria. So we have like three things going to happen here. Those who are carried away into captivity, the ten tribes, will mingle with whoever they're put with. Some of them will never come back, as we talked about before. Some of them will probably make their way to Babylon, maybe when they hear that the decree come out that they can come back, because we know in the New Testament that mostly all the tribes are represented. And also in Ezra, there's going to be sacrifices made for the 12 tribes. So they come back not as a nation, but they do come back. So now those who are left in the land, probably very few, mingle, intermarry, whatever, with those who came in, and they are still staying in the land. And there's also some who are left after Samaria was taken that went over to Judah. Hezekiah there's a recording of Hezekiah doing a Passover. And this Passover, he invites those who are left to come to the Passover, and a lot of these people do, so they probably stay there. So that's where the thing is. But if you keep reading in chapter 7, Second Kings chapter 17, verse 7, and all the way down to 23 tells why it happened, but verse 24 it talks about the origin of the Samaritans. And what happens was that all these people came in the land. They didn't worship God, so God sends lions in there to kill them. And they say to the king of Assyria, "We got a problem." And what the king does, he sends a priest a priest of Samaria, not a good priest, Southern Kingdom priest. He's a Northern Kingdom priest. You remember when they first set up this thing, he said, you know, anybody want to be a priest, you can be a priest. Well, it's one of those priests that doesn't really worship God, but they bring one of these priests back, and he instructs them, and it says in my version, how to fear God. It doesn't say how to worship God, but it's how to fear God. And he brings back with him the first five, a book. And I believe this book contains the first five books of the Bible, which is also called the Samaritan Bible. And with this, these people are taught. So that basically what it comes to be, if you go back to Ezra chapter 4, and when they can say in verse 2, "Let us build with you, for we like you seek your God. And we have been sacrificing him since the days of Esheron, king of Israel, who had brought us here." So it's not the Israelites that are saying this, it's the foreigners who have been brought into Israel. They have been taught by this priest how to fear God, which is probably worshiping God, something like that, and all of a sudden say, "Hey, we want to help you. You know, we want to be that." Yes, Ken? Yes. It's not all of Israel. Samaria is also used to represent Israel in the Bible. Also, Ephraim is used to represent all of Israel. But Samaria is the town, and then the area surrounding that town is what that is. So when they're going to be confronted, these Jews who want to build the temple are going to be confronted. They're going to be confronted by the Samaritans, and then later on there's going to be some confronted by all the nations that are around Samaria, still heathens and such as that. So this is basically the origin of the people known as Samaritans. Now our biggest, the interesting thing is that, back to my notes here, whoever that priest was, he seems to have possessed a copy of the Law of Moses, which is the Samaritan version, and it only has the first five books of the Bible. Jesus, when he is in his travels, he doesn't go around the country of Samaria like everybody else. He's going to go through it, and he meets the woman at the well in John chapter 4. And it's interesting to note that she will go, let's turn over just for a minute, John chapter 4. Now, In the New Testament, since we're in the New Testament, we can say that the Jews despise the Samaritans. I mean, they don't like the Samaritans at all. In John chapter 4, after Jesus talks to her and she goes back to her village, in verse 29 or verse 28, so the woman left her water pot and went into the city and said to the men, "Come, see a man who has told me all the things that I have done. This is not the Christ, is it?" So they are receptive. They know who the Christ is, the Messiah is to be. They know about him, you know. And where did he come from? The five books? I know the Jews didn't go over and convert anybody in Samaria because they don't like him. So it's just interesting to me that even though they're despised by the Jews, they did have some knowledge of God and of Christ, of the Messiah. So, any questions about that before we get into the real things that will happen here? It's just the origin of the Samaritans. It makes the New Testament a little easier to understand, especially when you know the origin of them. So, back to Ezra chapter 4. And again, back to verse 2, let us build with you, for we too, like you, seek your God. And now here comes the first problem they're going to encounter with these Samaritans. Keep in your mind always that verse 1, it says, these are the enemies, you know. They seem like good guys. You know, we want to help. We'll help you build. You know. You know, we sacrifice to God like you sacrifice to God. but as it goes on, the leaders refuse our help. Why? You have different versions will say different things. My New American Standard will say, you don't have anything in common with us. The NIV says you have no part with us. You're not like us. You don't do things like we do. And the whole thing is that you don't worship God like we worship God. And I have a verse. I don't have a verse. I have to go back to 2 Kings. When I cut down my outline, I really cut it down. that's at the end of the chapter, I believe, where it says... I guess verse 30, after that priest comes back, verse 32, they also fear the Lord and appoint among many themselves priests of the high places who acted for them in the houses of the high places. They feared the Lord and served their own gods according to the custom of the nations from among whom they've been carried in exile. And if you go down to verse 41, so while the nations feared the Lord, they also served their idols. Their children likewise, their grandchildren, as his fathers did, as they do today. So this is what you don't have in common with us. The Jews saying, we're here to worship God. We're here to build an altar, build a temple, worship exactly as he has commanded us. And that's the difference. These people, they worship God. They offer sacrifices to God, but they still got their other gods. You know, it's like living those. You sure it's not three? I lived three secret lives. Richard Colson, you, that, Ken, the TV show. I led three lives or two lives. Okay, well, we can't say that because we got to go to the sermon. I led two lives. Anyway. They were basically living two lives. They were offering sacrifices to God over here, but they weren't giving their idols up over here. And because of that, they had nothing in common with the Jews, because the Jews, they're going to worship God and God alone. Because this is all they're depending on. I don't know if you talked about it last week, but they I don't think you did talk about it last week, but they're depending on God. You know, God has blessed them enough to bring them back here. God had made promises to them about building the temple, And the only protection they had, or the only hope they had, was to do what God said, and then God would bless them. Because their past history told them, says, if we don't do what God says, God will do this. I mean, they had a real good lesson there. So, they refused their help. There's other things, too. You remember in Ezra chapter 2, we had some people come, and they couldn't prove their genealogy. They couldn't prove they were a Jew. And then you had the ones who couldn't prove that they were a priest because they didn't have their genealogy. What about the genealogy for these Samaritans? You know, they can't prove they're a Jew. You know, they can't prove who they are. So if the Jews had rejected the ones who had wanted the ones back in chapter 2, they surely would reject these here because they have nothing to do with them. They worship God, but they also worship idols. They were a mixed race. They weren't even a pure race. They were, you know, a mixture of everything. And, of course, wait a minute. I got 15 minutes? Wow. Okay. So they're rejecting them on the fact is that you have nothing in common with us. You're not like us. And that's going to cause them some problems. And, of course, they were, and immediately they told them in chapter 3 at the end, says, but we ourselves together will build to the Lord. So we'll build this temple ourselves. You're not included. And, of course, now we're going to have some problems because of this. And, of course, the leaders are legally they're okay because the decree was to the Jews and not to anybody else. They take a stand based on principle, knowing that this principle is going to cause some problems. It's going to cause opposition. That's why it's going to happen. And this opposition will finally lead to them stopping building on the temple, doing what God wants to do. And of course, you know, maybe they remember the lesson about intermarrying with these people, such as that in the past they didn't get rid of all the Canaanites in the land of Canaan when they first came over and they had all these problems and they're remembering their past history. We don't want to do that again, so they're rejecting for them. So in verses 4 and 5, the people of the land, then they start discouraging the Jews. Since you won't let me help, I'm going to stop it, is what we're going to do. They threaten them. They hinder them. They may disrupt their supply of money and materials. They may have bribed officials back in headquarters, Babylon, capital, wherever in Persia, wherever they were. They could have done all these things. And then we come to verse 6, which is kind of going to be a problem here. We come to verse 6. Actually, it says, let's leave it back to verse. And they hired counselors against them, verse 5, against them to frustrate their counsel all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. A long period of time they're going to mess with these people. Time, about 16 years. You know how dates go. But you need to remember that. Now, in chapter 4, verse 6, the writer, Ezra, stops and he remembers another time, because remember, Ezra is 60 years into the future before he ever comes back. He stopped and he remembers another time, when the countries had gathered together to stop the building of the walls of Jerusalem, not the temple, but the walls of Jerusalem. And that's what this second part of this chapter is all about. Verse 6, in the reign of Ahasuerus, at the beginning of his reign, which is the guy who replaced Cyrus, his name is actually Campus. Where is that over here? They write letters. First of his reign, hey, we got an opportunity to stop these Jews, let's write a letter. Now, as you read on, there's going to be a decree say, hey, stop the building of the walls. But not about the temple, because that's why I'm saying there's two letters here. Verse 6 is one letter. Verse 7 to the end of the chapter to verse 23 is another letter. The second letter is way in the future about stopping the building of the walls. In chapter 5, when they do start rebuilding the temple, if there was a decree for them to stop, they wouldn't have been doing it in the first place. So there's never a decree telling them to stop building the temple. But there will be an order for them to stop building the walls of Jerusalem. So we have two letters here. It's a little confusing, but sometimes it's not. But the interesting thing here is that second letter starting in verse 7. The governor or commander writes a letter. But in verse 10, and the rest of the nations. So this time it's not to the Samaritans. It's all the nations have banded together to stop the building of the walls of Jerusalem. Now, the policy of the Assyrians was to put them there so all these nations wouldn't know each other, wouldn't have anything in common, they wouldn't band together. You know, but all of a sudden they seem to band together to stop the building of the walls of Jerusalem. Interesting how, you know, things happen like that. That's one point I wanted to make about that. And the next thing is that there's about four reasons why they wanted to stop Jerusalem being built. And again, we're way in the future, maybe 50, 60 years from the time of the building of the temple. The temple will be built in the next chapter, guarantee you. But the first reason is they wanted to inform the king that these Jews had a history of being a rebellious people, and which is true. They rebelled against Assyria. They rebelled against Babylon. That was their history. They were a rebellious city. The second reason was, and this is by verse 13, if you let them rebuild this city, then they're going to stop paying taxes and tribute and toll to the king. If you build a city, they get powerful, you don't get anything anymore. This would be a problem. You know, we don't want you to have this problem. And the third reason is the officials, verse 14, felt since we were employed by you, we eat, as it says in verse 14. I think some of your verses in verse 14 says that we eat your salt or some phrase like that. Basically, we're in the pay of you, and it wouldn't be right for us not to tell you about these things. That was the third reason. And the fourth reason, if they rebuild this city, they might encourage these other nations to band together and revolt against Persia. So that, I think my notes, revolt against the empire. So they wanted the king to look into these things and let me know what's happening. And so the king does in verses 17 through 23. The letter's translated. He looks into it and says, yeah, these are rebellious people. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. What we need to do is I'm going to issue an order. He says, you tell them real quick, stop building the walls. Until he leaves himself an out here. Where am I at my notes? I've got to get the right verse here. Verse 21. So now issue a decree to make these men stop work so this city may not be rebuilt until a decree is issued by me. So he's saying stop the work, but maybe, you know, there might be something not quite right here. So it's only until I say something different. And so immediately they go and they basically take an army or something like that. But verse 23, as soon as they get the copy, they went in haste to Jerusalem to the Jews and they stopped them by force of arms. They possibly even tore down part of the wall that we're building. Now this leads us, this letter that's way in the future, leads us into the time of Nehemiah. And this is maybe 3 or 4 years before Nehemiah shows up. And then, of course, Nehemiah has the orders to rebuild the walls. The king at that time probably had a change of heart, or He realized that maybe we need to have a fortified Jerusalem as a buffer between Egypt and Persia. Whatever, it was changed later, and Nehemiah comes back, and he goes in, and he'll rebuild the walls of the city in 52 days. Is that right? It's quick. I mean, it's real quick. But anyway, this is sometimes the Old Testament is really confusing, because this is something that reminded Ezra of something that happened in his time, and so he put it in here, right here. But we come back to the book, ending up with the last verse. It says, "Then the work of the house of God in Jerusalem ceased, and was stopped until the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia." So the harassment of their enemies made them stop the building of the temple. Now, there's not a law that said, hey, stop, because they had legal right from Cyrus, the decree that cannot be changed by anybody, to build the temple. So that's not what stopped them. It wasn't a law. It was these people harassing them and doing things to them. And maybe the people finally got to the point where it said, hey, if we stop building, they'll leave us alone. You don't know. But they stopped the building of the temple. Yes? Pardon me?
The king had the power to stop them.
But he didn't. Now that's the building of the walls of the city, yeah. But the temple, they don't have anything. It's just, and also they could have just got busy in their lives, and all of a sudden God wasn't that important anymore. Maybe they continued to go and offer sacrifices to the altar and just didn't get around to finishing the building. And then we'll find out in chapter 5 that also there's that prophecy that in 70 years the temple would be rebuilt. And they're saying, hey, it's not time yet. It's not time for us to build the temple. They're finding an excuse. At the beginning of the chapter, they're ready to build the temple. At the end of the chapter, or in chapter 5, Haggai will come, or the other prophet will come. I don't remember exactly right now, but he will say, Zechariah is the other prophet, and one of the two will say that you're saying it's not the time to start building the temple, and yes, it was. That would be next week's lesson on that. But it's really interesting that they stopped not because of a law, just by a cause they were discouraged by their enemies around them. Maybe constant harassment, whatever. It'll happen again in the building of the wall in the book of Nehemiah. It'll happen more and more. They'll be discouraged by their enemies. But these people just stopped building the temple. I think personally that they took the lumber that they had brought from Lebanon, and they built houses with them. And that's in the next chapter too. You built your houses, but God's temple is still not being built. You plant and you're not being prosperous because you're not doing what God says. Now that's an Old Testament principle. If you do what God says, God will bless you. Not necessarily, and physically, they would be blessed physically, not necessarily in the New Testament, but that was one of their problems. So next week, have any more questions or comments about chapter 3 and chapter 4? I told you I could do it. Of course, I didn't know that when I started. any comments about these people? Next week, if not, next week we'll have, it mentions very briefly in chapter 5 about Haggai and Zechariah coming. And then all of a sudden, the work starts again. We want to go next week into those two prophets just a little bit. They're great lessons there, let me tell you. But one of the lessons is in there is consider your ways, and things like that. There's lessons in there we want to hit just briefly. But so we're ended. Actually, the class is ended. Any other comments, complaints? I could ask for praises, but, you know, I don't want that. Anyway, glad you were here. I hope I didn't go too fast for you, but we want to lay a foundation where we can come back and pick up lessons. Did you find some?
Huh?
No, that's your copy.
Okay.